Lori Houston's News for the Heart is dedicated to helping you give a voice to your own soul. Our hearts have the power to free us from pain and the struggles that keep us from awakening to our true essence. Join Lori now as we delve into our heart and soul to find the path that will open us to the possibilities and lead us to the life we love to live.
Hey, good afternoon. This is News for the Heart. And today I have Tom Campbell with me. And Tom is a physicist who I love having on the show. And we did a bunch of shows. Then we had a little bit of a hiatus. And Tom's now back. And now we are going extra tech and we're doing some videos. And Tom has done some videos lately that, you know, have been great with myself and Donna and Marla and I'm drawing a blank and I know her name.
Evita.
There you go.
just did one with Evita.
Oh, Evita. Nice. Yeah. Okay. So we're playing around. And anyway, I love having Tom because he can take something that is so beyond my, not beyond my grasp anymore, but something that I was really not geared towards. I'm not very much a science person, and Tom is able to bring science and physics and I guess more the spiritual aspects of that to make sense. And that's why I love having Tom. So welcome to the show, Tom.
Well, thank you very much, Lori. It's always fun for me to come here and talk with you. These are always good videos that we make.
I think so. This will be great. I'm excited about having this new format that we'll share. So today I thought we would look at the larger consciousness and how the larger consciousness helps us evolve. I know it's here to support us. I think sometimes we kind of forget about it. We get caught up in our own little world. We get caught up in our ego. But I want people to understand, and I know we've done a lot of shows on consciousness, but they've all been just audio. And so now we have the video aspect to it, and I think it will, you know, bring in more people. So let's kind of do a little bit of a recap, not a huge recap, but this may feel like a little bit of a do-over since we've been having some technical things that have been happening, but it's all new. And are we still in Mercury retrograde? Maybe that's part of the problem. All right, so let's talk about that. Let's talk about the larger consciousness as well as the individual consciousness. Okay. And how it sort of assists us.
Okay, that is it's a real good topic, because if you are going to develop yourself and move along this path of increasing the quality of your consciousness or spiritual growth or evolving your consciousness quality, however we want to say that, if you move along that path, one of the things you must do eventually is to create and to gain a personal relationship with the larger consciousness system. You see, that is that's a connection. If, you know, eventually you'll end up doing that, where you and the larger consciousness system, you know, work together as a team, if you will. You know, there's a connection, and there's a lot of advantages once you get that connection and make it kind of a stable and a fundamental and constant part of your life. And, you know, so that's talking about how we in the larger conscious system, you know, larger conscious system actually interact and connect with each other. And, you know, what does that mean to us? What do we get out of that? You know, and what does the larger conscious system get out of that? These are all some pretty significant things to talk about, because if you progress down this path enough, you will have a connection, a personal connection with the larger consciousness system. And if you don't, and if you can't make that connection, then you will be very limited into just how far you can go, you know, how much you can develop. It's a limitation. You know, I was teaching how to meditate, how to communicate, how to connect with this larger consciousness system, And when I was doing that, this was a TMI a few months back, and one of the big problems that many people had, and they've been doing this for years. These weren't newcomers. These were people who had been working in raising their consciousness quality and their spiritual growth for decades. But many of them were wrapped around technique and things that they had to do, you know, in order to get certain results and processes. They had, what should we call them, rituals that they had to go through. Things had to be a certain way. You know, maybe the room had to be quiet, or maybe it had to be dark, or maybe they had to have, you know, this or that. They had a lot of things that were kind of trappings of their process that they'd kind of grown up with or learned with, and you take those away, and of course they couldn't, you know, nothing worked anymore because that's what they were used to. So they had a lot of process involved in it, and they wanted to know, you know, how they could improve their processes. Well, of course, the answer to that is you can improve your process by getting rid of all that process. You really don't need it. Right. It holds you back. It gets in the way, and it becomes a limitation. Right. What you need is a personal relationship, a personal connection to the larger consciousness system, and then all the process disappears. It's not about technique. It's not about your meditation skills. It's not about practice so much. It's just about being and connection. And that was a big aha moment for many of the people in the class, because they were pursuing, what do I do, you see, to get this result? And it doesn't have anything to do with what you do. Your process, your doing process is irrelevant. Mm-hmm. It's what do I have to be to get these results? How can I connect in a way to get these results? And many of them then, once they got over this hurdle, would realize that the larger consciousness system became a partner. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a, you know, they were basically partnered with the larger consciousness system in their process of growing up. Well, it's so much easier to grow up in that state than it is one where you're trying to force it through your, you know, your methods, your processes that you have.
Your expectations here.
Yeah, you're pushing it. Yeah, yeah. Through what you do, as opposed to who you are and what you are, and that connection. So anyway, it is an important thing that the more advanced you get in working with this, the more important, I guess, it comes. Otherwise, you just get limited. So let's just go back a little bit and kind of talk about how we in the larger consciousness system are connected. Okay. And what does it have to do with us? What do we have to do with it? And what's, how is it that we can end up in this partnership that allows for a much greater growth, a much greater evolution of your consciousness quality? Well, to begin with, the larger consciousness system is the fundamental thing. It's the fundamental reality. We are consciousness. And everything that we experience, we can say, is a product of consciousness, created by consciousness. Okay, and we can make that a little more reasonable with a little experiment. If you close your eyes and you close your ears, if you don't hear anything, see anything, smell anything, taste anything, if you cut off all your senses, all your sense data, then what would your reality be? It would be nothing. You would be kind of Descartes, I am, you know. You would be a piece of existence, a piece of consciousness, a piece of awareness floating in a black void would be all your reality would be. Okay, so what is our reality? It's information. It's data. It's all that sense data creates this reality for us. And the sense data is digital. We think of it as analog, but it's really digital. It's little pulses of electrical charge that your retina, you know, when it gets the light goes through the lens, hits the retina. The retina creates electrical charge, and that electrical charge runs down to your nervous system, ends up modifying neurons and patterns of neurons, and all of that is discrete. It's discrete electrical charges. It's discrete neurons. Anything that is discrete, we call digital. It's just another word for digital. It's broken down into little pieces. You know, the cells in your nervous system are little pieces. So that's why we call it a digital system. And it's all about information. So it's a digital information system. So that's what we are. And the larger consciousness system is a digital information system. You see, so now maybe it'll make a little more sense as we talk about our reality in terms of information. That's what it is. Now, we think that we tend to identify with our body, you know, and say, who are you? Well, I am so-and-so. I'm 6 feet tall, I weigh 175 pounds, I'm a physicist, and we go through all of this stuff to identify ourselves. And it's all about our body and what we do, what our body does, and the connections our body has made. You know, it's all very physical sort of things. But what we really are is consciousness. We're an individuated unit of consciousness, and we are playing a virtual reality game. We are receiving a data stream from this larger consciousness system, and this data stream defines all of our sense data. Okay, so our sense data is really just data, and it's data being computed by a computer, and that is sent to us as consciousness, and we interpret it as this reality. So now we're very much like your Sims character. Our body is very much like your Sims character, or say the elf in World of Warcraft. That's our physical world is a virtual world. It's a virtual reality. And if you're playing Sims or playing World of Warcraft, you are the consciousness. You, the player, are the consciousness for your character. If you don't tell your character to move, it doesn't move. It just stands there and doesn't do anything. You tell your elf to run or jump or fight or whatever it does, it's because you give it the command to do that. You're the consciousness because you're making all the choices. Consciousness makes choices. That's what we do. We are in this larger consciousness system. We're playing this virtual reality game in order to make choices. And the reason that is what we do is because we are here to evolve. There's a reason why we're playing this virtual reality game called physical reality, making choices. And that's because we are a part of a larger consciousness system that needs to evolve. It's evolve or die, you see. If you're a system, you either evolve or you de-evolve. Staying in the middle is not long-term feasible. You can dither around in the middle for a while, but eventually you move to one side or the other. Eventually you either evolve and go forward or you de-evolve and go backwards. It's just the nature of the way, that's how things work. So if you're a information system, you evolve by lowering your entropy, that is creating more information. The lack of information is randomness, no order, random. Everything's just random. There is no order, no structure, nothing is put together. It's just random bits that mean nothing, no information. Now, if you give those bits order, you structure those bits, now you have information. It's not just randomness anymore. So as you can see that this concept of entropy, where you have high entropy means you have high randomness. It's very, you know, it's a measure of disorder, so you have a lot of disorder. You have low entropy, it means you have less randomness. That means you've taken some of those bits and you've created information. You've created structure out of those bits. So an information system evolves by lowering its entropy, creating information out of randomness, you see? So that's what this larger conscious system has to do. If it doesn't keep working on evolving, it will de-evolve, and those bits will become more and more random, and eventually if they become all random, then the information system is dead. There is no information. It's just randomness. So this larger consciousness system, and if those of you who are inquisitive about, well, where did that larger consciousness system come from? Well, that's a long story that would take us several hours to go through. It's all very logical, and it's described elsewhere. And I guess we can talk about that toward the end. But it's in books. it's in my YouTube videos. And there are good logical, you know, answers to that question as to where does it come from and what's its origins and so on. But we're just going to start with it is, you know, we're conscious. So we can assume that consciousness exists. And then I'm starting out now with kind of in the middle, if you will, of this process, saying it's this larger consciousness system is what's fundamental. We are pieces of it. You and I, we are pieces of consciousness, and we're engaged in a virtual reality game where we're playing a character, and our character, we call it our avatar. It's like the elf or the Sims characters, your avatar. Our bodies are the avatar in this virtual reality game. And we work very much like the virtual reality games. In a virtual reality game, the computer sends you a data stream. You take that data stream and you display it and interpret it to be the World of Warcraft or the Sims world. You interpret that data. It's just a lot of ones and zeros. It's pixels on a, you know, on a screen. Mm. And all those little pixels, you know, there's a couple of million of those pixels, and each pixel has a certain color and a certain intensity. And that's it. And you take all those little dots of light, and you, in your mind, in your consciousness, you interpret that as that Sims world or that World of Warcraft world. You know, so your elf is running around in that world, and there's trees and, you know, critters and monsters and houses and other people, and you communicate and you talk with each other, and, you know, so it's a multiplayer virtual reality. Well, that's what's going on with us. We are an individuated unit of consciousness. We receive a data stream, just like you, the consciousness playing the elf, receives a data stream. We interpret that data to be this virtual reality that we call our physical universe, you know, our life here on planet Earth. That's our virtual reality, and we're here to make choices. Okay? Now, the choices we want to make are choices that help ourselves, our piece of consciousness, plus the whole system, evolve, which means these are choices that are low entropy choices. Well, low entropy in a social system means love, caring, cooperation, helping each other. It's about other. You see, that's the low entropy interaction of a lot of individual units of consciousness. Individual units of consciousness are, you know, we say like a bunch of people. Well, it's a bunch of consciousnesses, you see, that are interactive. What consciousness does, it's an information system. It communicates. Right. So we communicate. And if you have a bunch of individuals communicating with each other, then the optimal way for those bunches of consciousness to interact is with caring. It's with respect, is with helping each other. They can do more. They can learn more. They can build more. They can create less entropy if that's how they relate to each other. If they relate to each other with fear, with no trust, with, you know, it's not about anybody else. You know, it's the hell with anybody else. It's all about me. You know, what about me and how do I get mine? Well, that is the kind of most suboptimal way that you can interact with other units of consciousness in order to lower entropy, in order to build, create, you know, make more and more useful information. So now we're kind of creating this model now in our heads that we are individuated units of consciousness. We have a mission to lower our entropy or grow spiritually. It's the same sort of thing, to care about other, be focused on other rather than ourselves, and that's the love side. As opposed to de-evolving to the fear side, which is all about self. Okay, so that's kind of the structure. This is the model, if you will, the theoretical structure that I'm trying to explain. Okay, now, what about the virtual reality? Why do we need the virtual reality? Well, if we were just a bunch of individuated units of consciousness sharing information, that would be like, you know, well, think of 10,000 people or 100,000 people in a big chat room. They all can share information, but that's it. That's all they are. They just can share information. Hmm. Well, all right, what can you do with that? How can you learn? How can you grow from that? What are your choices that you have? Well, see, the choices are very limited because there's really no traction. If you put out some information, you really don't get much feedback on how that impacted others or what others are going to do with that information or what. Well, they could say something to you, but you don't know whether that's real or not. They could just be making that up. They could be playing you along. You know, they would have their own agenda. It's really hard to interact with other in this just passing messages back and forth. It's a very difficult thing to do. So we create, the system creates this virtual reality for us to go play in. So a lot of these individuated units of consciousness go log on to this virtual reality game that we're now going to call Humans on Earth, and each one of them picks an avatar, which is a body, and now they're interacting with each other. See, now there's traction. There's lots of choices. Every interaction causes, you know, interactions with others. Everything you do is connected to other people. The way you feel, the way you, you know, the choices you make affect everyone else, and everybody else's choices affect you. And you can see what those effects are. The effects are immediate. And you know, what you see is what you get. So there's a lot of constraints here that make it a much better place to learn than if you're just in a big chat room passing information back. So that's why the larger consciousness system would go to the trouble to create a virtual reality for individuated units of consciousness to interact in. So here we are interacting in virtual reality, and it's the fast track in evolution. We're in the game that's the fast track to growing up, to evolving the quality of our consciousness, because here we are interacting. Now, you know, again, look around, you know, read the newspaper, you know, turn on the TV, watch out your window, you know, talk to your neighbors, and you can see we're not doing all that well, but that's because we started from, you know, ground zero. Mm. We started with very high entropy consciousnesses. We started at the beginning, and we're trying to evolve, and we have been evolving over the last couple of million years that humans have been scurrying around on the planet. We have been evolving, and we are much more evolved now.
Sorry.
Yeah, there.
I have somebody who wants to say hi.
Yes, I see, walking across the keyboard. Yes. There, playing a little tune.
Uh-huh, a little worried that that was going to, yeah, cut something off.
Yeah, well, now, he or she.
He.
Yeah, well, he's happy now that
he's
in mama's lap, right? And everything will be okay now. Yeah, I sometimes get I have a cat also, and it sometimes jumps in my lap while I'm doing these talks. But right now he's in another room. So.
Yeah, well, I thought he was sleeping, but he got up.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's the picture. That's the theory of you know, who we are, what we're doing, and how it is that we're doing it.
Right.
So we are consciousness, individuated units of consciousness. That's us. This body is our avatar. It's the person we're playing. Okay? It's the body, and the body then interacts with other avatar bodies, just like the elf interacts with other players. You know, players from all over the planet here play World of Warcraft. So they're playing at all different times, you know, all different countries, all different places, but they're all in this World of Warcraft game, and they are, you know, interacting with each other and with the computer characters and so on. That's the way it is with us. So we're all interacting with each other with these avatars, because that gives us feedback to the results and the quality of our choices. Now, if your life is full of joy, full of happiness, full of, satisfaction, you know, you just, life is just great, you know, if that's the way you feel, then you're doing well. The quality of your consciousness is high, and you're doing very well as far as your spiritual growth, as far as your evolution of the quality of your consciousness. But if your life is full of struggle, if it's full of anxiety, it's full of stress, you know, you get angry, you get upset, things aren't the way you want them, things aren't the way you need them, etc., then you have a long way to go. You have to grow up. You have to lower, you know, your entropy. And you are the way you are because of all the choices you have made up to this time. Well, the good news is, as consciousness you're immortal. You don't die. When your avatar dies, you know, you are consciousness. You continue to exist, and you pick another avatar, and you get back in the game, exactly the way you do in World of Warcraft or in The Sims. If your character dies, then you get back in the game. You play another avatar. Or in the World of Warcraft, you revive your old avatar. You know, your avatar gets reinstated. So that's the way it works here. Okay, so that's the way we are. Now, what's this relationship between us and the larger consciousness system? Well, to begin with, we're a piece of that larger consciousness system. We're a chip off that old block. And we have the same fundamental potential that the system does, because we're just a piece of it. We're an operative piece. We have free will to make choices. Okay, we are evolving. We are part of the larger conscious system's strategy to evolve, to continue to exist. And by putting us in this virtual reality, we're going to grow up faster because we've got the feedback. We've got we can see the results of, you know, what we're doing. Well, as I say, you know, you look around and you see the results of what we're doing. Not too good, but better than we did 1,000 years ago or 300 years ago or even 100 years ago. We're better off now than we were as far as our quality of consciousness. Not just better off materially. That's irrelevant. We're better off in our sense of being part of community, in a sense of caring about other. Our world is shrinking. Now we're in a global environment now with the internet and our connections to people and their connections to us all over the world. So we are growing and connecting with other in more ways and hopefully in more productive ways. So that's good. We are evolving, but we've got a long, long way to go. Now, all of us have fear components and all of us have love components. All of us have things that upset us, things that make us angry or bother us, you know, and that's our fear and our ego, ego being a result of fear. And all of us also have people we care about other than ourselves, you see. So we're pieces, we are on both sides. But what we're trying to do here is grow up, which means get rid of that fear part, get rid of that anxiety and trouble and struggle part, get rid of that it's all about me part, and grow that part where it's about other, where it's caring, where it's based on compassion and interest in others. So that's what we're doing. Now, if we are the larger consciousness's strategy to evolve, then the larger consciousness system has a, cares about how it works out. You know, it wants us to succeed. Our success is its success. We are a piece of it. It's us. We're it. You see? So as we fail, it fails. As we de-evolve, it's de-evolving because we're just little chunks of it. So as a piece lowers its entropy or increases its quality, then the whole, you know, increases its quality by that little bit. And all the little bits add together, you know, to make it more evolved or, you know, less evolved. So we have this direct relationship with the larger consciousness system. We're a piece of it, and we're an important piece because we are its strategy for evolving, staying alive, for, you know, its growth, its changing. So that's why, you know, we eventually need to create this relationship with the larger consciousness system, because that's really home for us. That's really where, you know, what we are, where we come from. That's our core things. We are consciousness at the core. We're not a body. We're consciousness. The body is a data stream that we interpret to be this reality. So that kind of sets the tone of how we connect. So now this larger consciousness system will go out of its way to help us succeed if we are paying attention and in a process of learning and growing up. Now, if we're in a process of not really caring, not understanding, we're in a process of grabbing as much as we can grab, you see, and then trying to figure out how can we hold on to it to get the things, you know, we want everything the way we want it. If it's all about us, then we're not part of the larger conscious system solution. We're part of its problem, you see. We're not then encouraged in that kind of behavior. We're kind of left alone to stew in our own, you know, sauce, which is usually a very uncomfortable, unhappy, miserable, you know, not very nice place to be. And we just hang out there until we finally get it and move on to a better way of being. We find a better way of being. So it's cut and try. It's an experiment and see how that works. And again, if your life is full of joy and happiness and satisfaction, then it's working well. But if it isn't, then you need to look around and say, well, what needs to change? And the answer to what needs to change is always you. You are the only person you can change. So what needs to change is you. And what we tend to do is we point our finger out to everybody else and everything else and say, that's what needs to change. I'd just be really happy if so-and-so would do this and somebody else would do that, if my children, you know, were well-behaved and, you know, as my spouse did, you know, whatever I'd like them to do and be. If we could just fix the rest of the world, then we'd be really happy. But it doesn't work that way, you see. It just doesn't work that way. Even if you could fix the rest of the world, you wouldn't be happy. You'd think you would be. You think, oh, well, if I just had that, it would be great. But it doesn't work that way. And if you think back about your life, you probably had these times when it was just this one thing that was really annoying and causing you all the trouble. And if you just fixed that, and that actually did fix, or it went away. And did it fix your life? No. You say it, you just thought it would, but it doesn't. Because as soon as that struggle's gone, another struggle starts. It's one struggle after the next. And if you solve one, another is there to take its place. And so that will be forever. There will always be another one there to take its place because you are in a mode of struggling. You're in a mode of trying to change the outside world to suit you, which means it's all about you. I need everything else to suit me, to make me happy. Well, that will never make you happy. What makes you happy is when you change yourself and become more caring. It's about other. You let go of that ego. You let go of that fear. Then you become a happy person. So see, this is a schoolhouse. And if you learn your lessons and you do well, you feel really great. You're a happy camper. Life is wonderful. And guess what? You can learn even faster now. You learn more. So the more you learn, the easier it is to learn more. And the less you learn, you see, the easier it is to, you know, to learn less, right? So that's the way it is. What a great schoolhouse. You know, that's how they train rats to go through mazes, right? The rat does it wrong, he gets a shock. The rat does it right, he gets some cheese. So that's the way you train a critter. And, you know, we're critters, and that's the way we're being trained. We're in this virtual reality, and if we get it right, things are good. We get it wrong, we struggle, and we struggle. So here we are in the maze called, you know, virtual reality, Earth, you know, physical universe, and we need to learn how to get it right and get through the maze, you know, and avoid the shocks. And that's kind of why we're here. And as we grow up, as we succeed, the whole system succeeds. So the system wants us to succeed, you see. But you have to cooperate with the system to succeed. So if you're trying to train that rat to go through a maze and the rat just keeps getting shocked, and the more it gets shocked, the angrier it gets, and the more it goes back to that same place where it gets shocked, and it's like it's in a war with the shocking system. And it, you know, if as long as it's not really trying to change things and say, well, what else could I do besides run into this thing that shocks me? You know, what else might I do? What are my other choices here? How can I be otherwise than the way I'm being? Unless the rat asks that question, the rat makes no progress. The rat has to be wise enough to say, this isn't working. What else can I try? And see how that works better. And then you try that. And if you still get shocked, then you say, well, let me try something else. And what you'll find is what stops shocking you, what works, is that when you start getting rid of the fear and the ego and the beliefs and start caring about other, that's the kind of maze we're in. And that's what it takes to get through this maze and to be, you know, a happy person, full of joy, you know, connected, a whole person rather than struggling. But you have to want to do it. You have to have the will to do it. So one of the first things that you can do is to get a personal connection to this larger consciousness system, because it will help you. It wants you to succeed and will help you. It'll give you hints. When you get to the turn in the maze where you could go left or right, it'll give you that hint. You'll call it intuition, but you'll just get this feeling that to go right is the right way to go. To go left, I don't think so. And then you follow that intuition, you see, and you'll find that intuition will help you. Well, most of us, we don't pay any attention to our intuition. We don't believe that intuition, because that intuition, more than not, is not a clear, open connection to the larger conscious system. It's a connection directly to our fear and our ego, you see. And it's our ego is now the intuition. The ego says, well, you know, you need to do this or you need to do that. That's how you get ahead. And it's based on your fear and other things. So you have to change that. One of the ways you change that is you learn to meditate. That's why meditation seems to be the start point for everybody who's on a spiritual, you know, journey. They all learn to meditate. Well, why? What's so special about meditation? And what's so spiritual about meditation? Well, it lets you get in touch with yourself. It lets you get to know your own consciousness in a way that you become more self-aware. And as you become more self-aware, you begin to be able to separate things like fear, ego, from other things like your intuition and your connection to the larger consciousness system. You begin to be able to separate those a little bit, and you can tell one from the other. You see, now that starts you down this path, and the further you go, the easier it is to get further yet. So that's kind of, you know, the bigger picture of what we're talking about here. This system, this larger conscious system, will help you. It not only will give you information through your intuition, if there's something you really need, if there's some information you're missing, if there's a concept that you haven't gotten yet, it will lay that at your feet. It will nudge you to that concept. The books will jump off the bookshelf, and you'll be drawn to a particular book maybe, or a particular article, a particular person, because there's something in there for you to learn, some connection. You will have challenges that help you understand things, because again, we learn through experience. You only learn through experience. If it's not your experience, it's not your truth. You only learn through experience. So experiences will come to you that will help you learn, but if you're not paying attention and you're not trying to learn, then mostly it's just lost on you. You know, it just goes in one ear and out the other, or you reject it, or you don't pay any attention because you're not paying attention. You're not trying to learn. You don't have any, you're not focused on growing up. You're focused on how do I get things the way I want them? How do I get people to act the way I want them? So you're focused on your fear. You're focused on your ego. And as long as you're focused on that, well, now you're not paying attention. And if you're not paying attention, then the larger consciousness system can't really help you very much because you're not paying attention. So you see, so you have to pay attention in order to get the help. So it's one of those things you just have to start out doing. And meditation is a good way to start. So you start to learn, who am I? Who am I inside? Who am I at the core? You get to let go of that being level that you're always what you're thinking. You know, that you are your brain. You are your intellect. Well, that's not so. You have a being level, who you are at the core. Who are you really inside? Not what you think you are, not who you'd like to be, not the character that you're pretending to be, not your image, not, you know, not all the roles that you are. You're in the mother role, the daughter role, you know, the father role, the brother or sister role, you know, the happy homemaker role, the, you know, whatever, on and on. You play all these roles, and they begin then to define our life. But we're none of those roles. We are something deeper besides all those, what we call them last time, stories. You know, we have all these stories that define us. And we are not the story, you see. We're the person in the story that makes choices. And when you meditate, you begin to get to be introduced to that being level, to that person that is at the core. Because in that meditation state, you let go of all of the rest of it. You let go of all the noise and the chatter. You let go of all the roles. You just exist as a fundamental individual piece of consciousness. And that's why how everybody starts. You know, whether you're in the Eastern, you know, Eastern philosophy, Western philosophy, anything else, that's where it all starts. And even if you don't call it meditation, it's just quiet time where you kind of let things go and you know, turn inward, or you be by yourself, or it's your thinking time, or your quiet place where you go to relax, whatever it is. That's the same thing. You know, when I talk about meditation, it doesn't have to be formal meditation, but it's some sort of letting go of all the stories, letting go of all the stuff and all the needs and the I wants and all the problems, all the struggles. When you let that go, what's left? Who are you? You see, and that's what these quiet times or meditations or, you know, listening to music, however you want to do it, that's how that works. And you need to do that enough that you get acquainted with your being level. Who are you? And when you are, often you'll find things that aren't too pleasant. You'll find things about yourself that, don't make you feel good, because you begin to realize how much you're driven by your fear, by your ego. And those can be very disconcerting things. And some people will feel very frightened when they meditate, because they feel like if they let go of all that stuff, well, if they let go of their story, now who would they be? Mm-hmm. What would they be if they didn't have the story? You know, if I'm not the mother, daughter, father, lover, you know, homemaker, if I'm not all these things, then who am I? And that's so scary that they stop. They don't do it anymore because of their fear. You see, they have the fear basically wins that battle. Because of their fear, they can't progress. The fear holds them back. So you have to have courage, and you have to want to do it. Those are the key things. And then you have to pursue it and keep working at it. It's not quick. And you will try very hard not to face your fears. You will dodge them and duck them and deny them and do everything else to not deal directly with your fear. And that's what your ego does. It's a buffer between you and your fear. So that's kind of where most of us are. But if you are dogged in your pursuit of higher quality, you will get there. You know, all it takes is the will to do it, an honest will to do it. And that doesn't mean act like you're doing it, or, you know, pretend that you want to do it because that's makes you feel better. Oh, I'm a good person. You know, I'm going to grow up and become, you know, more love-like and less self-centered. And that sounds good. So you sit down and you meditate or you do whatever, but you're not genuinely really interested in changing because that's too frightening. See, that won't work. You have to really do it. You have to really change yourself. And when you change at the being level, you're a different person. You're no longer the same person anymore. When you change at the intellectual level, well, that's just different information. Now you have different viewpoint, different way of looking at things, but you're still the same person. When you change at the being level, you are a different person altogether. And when you are a different person, you interpret that data differently. You interpret your world differently. And suddenly your world is a different world. You see? Right. You live in a different world when you change yourself, because that world is your interpretation of the data. And as you change, your interpretation will change. And your world will get nicer and nicer and more pleasant too, just because you're growing up inside. It changes your world as well as it changes you. Okay, well, that's been a long dialogue here. I guess I need to be quiet and let you get a word in to steer this boat that's kind of without a rudder.
Well, okay, so it brought up a few thoughts that I'd like to talk about. I mean, there is so much fear, and I know that seems to be in the collective unconscious. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's part of the larger consciousness, but they're not really separate, are they? Like, I don't believe that there's some evil doing something to us, but at the same time, I mean, we seem to be more, we're better able to be controlled and manipulated through fear than we are if we're, you know, in a good place. And so it does appear that there are things that sort of happen that are part of our ability to make better choices. And then, so, I mean, you kind of see them almost as two separate things. Like, there's the higher consciousness that's not just of this world, but we are certainly connected more rapidly or directly into this world, part of it. And we can make connections to, you know, certainly other worlds and different dimensions, and we can do all of that stuff. And that can help us maybe see from a different perspective and maybe see that, you know, things are not quite as bad as we think they are, because there's so much fear around in this world. Like, there's so much going on that we can get really caught up and lower our entropy, or raise our entropy, not lower it, that it's almost like it's an individual choice to, you know, to choose not to partake, to choose not to get involved in the things. Like, I don't watch the news. I haven't done that for years and years. And I try and tell people not to do that, because it can really suck you in and get you caught up in something that, in a lot of cases, just isn't real. Like, it's kind of manipulated to make it look worse than it is. So in some senses, it's almost like there's this test where, you know, do you really want to lower your entropy, or do you want to, you know, do you want to de-evolve and go into higher entropy? And I don't know how that impacts us, or how we can sort of maneuver ourselves into it. I think, you know, not watching the news, but it's there. Like, it's such a prevalent part of society at times. Like, just even talking to friends, like, they can sometimes go off into this, you know, into this fear thing, and you're like, oh, please. So, mm-hmm. Thoughts.
Okay, well, the way, what's happening there is, there's two main things going on. One is that as consciousness, we're all netted. We're all connected to each other. Right. Every consciousness is connected to every other consciousness. That's just the nature of consciousness. We are, as consciousness, we are information systems too. And we are all, you know, we're all part of the same larger conscious system. Therefore, we all can communicate. We're all netted. Now, what that means is that when you get a bunch of people together, that netted construct of all those people together becomes kind of like a group mind, if you will. We call that a mob consciousness. If we get a bunch of people together who are angry and upset and, you know, looking for vengeance or something, then we call that mob consciousness. And what we know is that a mob will act worse than any individual in that mob would act on their own. As a collective, They are a higher entropy group as a collective than they are if you pick each individual out. They do more terrible things as that group. That's because they're pulling each other down in that direction. So we have that. We have that in any group. If you have a group of people who work together and they're all in IBM, they all work for IBM. Well, there's a cultural mindset just in IBM. And just by going to work there, you begin to you know, you're a member of that, and you begin to be influenced by that mindset, that view of the world that you get as being a member of IBM. Or if you work at General Motors, it's the same way. Or if you are a member of the United States or a member of some other country, it works the same way. If you identify yourself with a group, then you also connect into kind of the group mind of that group and are influenced by it. Now, it works on the positive side as well. If you're around a bunch of people who are loving and caring and you know, high quality, it pulls you up.
Right.
And it makes you feel better. You're playing a little tune there.
I got to find a way to, it's a new computer, find a way to turn off all my notifications. I thought I'd done that.
Oh,
every once, okay. Things come up. I'm like, where is this coming from?
Okay. Well, anyway, so we get pulled up if we're in a positive group. It works the same way. So whatever group you're in, whatever group you identify, once you identify yourself as a part of that group, then you begin to interact with this, you know, with the group through your consciousness. And this is not, you know, actually, you know, it's not language and it's not body language. It's through consciousness. So any group has its own kind of group quality, if you will. And you can go and work at IBM, but feel like you're an outsider and don't belong. And then you won't be affected by that. Or you can be in Western culture and not feel like you really are part of Western culture. And you can be in that group and not be affected because now you're not connected to that. You get connected according to your intent. So once you say, oh, I'm a member of this, you know, and you kind of, that's the way you log on, if you will. That's the way you join it, is just by feeling like, intending that you're a part of it. Once you're a part of it, then you are affected by the whole. So now we have this state where we have 99.99% of all the humans on the earth are full of fear and ego, right? Well, now they create a lot of fear and ego as far as the group mind that goes with that. Now, C.G. Carl Jung, he talked about archetypes. And he had archetypes within various organizational levels of people. So there was the human archetypes, and then there was maybe national archetypes, and then maybe there's, like I say, IBM archetypes or General Motors archetypes or whatever. You know, that's where these archetypes come from. They're basically our, what do we call that? I guess group mind.
And media, because of the way it is, sensationalism sells. So it's still based on a greed mentality,
right,
where, you know, the more fear, the more sensationalism, the more people will connect into. And unfortunately, that is the case.
Right.
I mean,
and
it really is.
That creates our kind of our group mind, our attitude.
Right.
So if we are mostly fearful, then we've got this kind of fearful energy that's just around, and everybody kind of partakes of that. Everybody feels a little more edgy because they're in this kind of fearful energy field, you see. Now, when you grow up, you got to let that fear go. So you have to outgrow all that.
Right.
So it's not like you really start at a place that's neutral. You start at the bottom of the barrel here with all this fear, and you have to outgrow it. Now, the other thing you've got going on, that's the one thing, is kind of the connectedness we get with consciousness that helps to, something we have to kind of climb out of, if you will, because it's constantly pulling this back. So here you are trying to be nice, trying to be kind, and thinking about other, and you think about other and try to be helpful, and what happens is they slap you and tell you to get away and something like this, and now you're kind of deflated. You see, well, you have to realize that you have to grow up, and it can't be dependent on what anybody else does. It has to be you growing yourself up. It's not that, well, they're like that, so I can be that way too. You know, that's not going to help. So what happens is now we have people who realize that fear is the best way to control somebody. If someone's fearful, you can control that person. The more fearful they are, the easier it is to control them, and the more absolutely you control them. So that's why politicians would like to make you fearful. That's why people who, you know, want to change things, first what they want to do is make you fearful about that change so that they can manipulate you to agree with them. So we, you know, we look at the, anything, you know, look at marketeers. You know, marketeers want to sell you something. They want your money. So the way they do that is creating fear. Oh, if you don't use this product, nobody will like you, you know, or if you use this, you'll look so much better. You know, people will like you better. And they show pictures of some poor schmuck who gets told to go out and buy the beer, right? And if he doesn't bring the beer that everybody loves, you know, everybody will think he's a, you know, he's a real loser. But if he brings in the right beer and everybody loves it, then he's the super guy, and, you know, all of the nice girls, you know, want to hug him, you know, it's that sort of thing. So we set up these images, and it's basically they're all fear-based. They play on people's fears. Well, you know, I want to be more likable, therefore I have to wear these clothes, I have to drink this beer, I have to say these things. And pretty soon, you don't even know what you are at the being level. You've got all of this stuff going on, you know, in your intellect, all these fears that you have to be this way and you can't be that way and so on, that you're living out of your head now. You're in the control of your fear and your ego, and you don't even know you have a being level and wouldn't have any idea how to change it. And now you are, as you mentioned before, now you're just a character in your own story. Right. You see, you're not really, you know, you're not really yourself. And you define yourself in terms of everything else. You define yourself in terms of, you know, like you say, your job, your age, your sex, your, you know, whatever, your relationships, your friends. You know, who are you? Oh, you know, I'm a physicist and I work here and I'm this old. And, you know, you're defined by all this stuff. And you're not defined by what's inside of you. You're not defined by your core. And you don't even probably even know you have a core or what's in there, you see. So that's why we start with meditation. But anyway, the fear thing is everywhere. Marketeers want to make you fearful because that's how they can manipulate you to buy their products. Politicians want to make you fearful because that's how they can manipulate you to agree with them or vote for them or you know, whatever. You know, it's everybody uses fear. If you go into the internet and look at all of these conspiracy theories, well, all they're about is fear. Oh, this terrible thing is going to happen. This awful stuff is happening. You're being manipulated. You're being this. You're being that. And if they can work somebody else up to be frightened, then, hey, they've got an advocate. You know, they've got a member to their group. But they're not going to get any members to the group unless they can frighten people into being members. That's how you manipulate people. First you frighten them, and then you can manipulate them to do pretty much whatever you want. You know, that's why, in the U.S., 10 or 12 years ago, 15 years ago, we had these, we're on red, orange alert, you know, red alert, you know, it's really serious now, people, you know, watch out. And this was just going on constantly and constantly to keep the fear level stirred up, because as long as there was a high fear level, politicians could do whatever they wanted to, because the people would agree, because they were so full of fear, they could be led like children. You see, that's kind of the way fear works. So here we are in this world where everybody who would like to manipulate us is trying to frighten us. You know, we're trying to frighten our children. Oh, if you do that, or if you hang out with those people, you know, you'll get into drugs and you'll become, you know, a terrible person. And then, so we're always trying to frighten people to be the way we want them to be. We control our children with fear. We control everything with fear. So we have a very fear-based culture, and we use it as a tool, and it's used as a tool on us. And we are very fearful people. And in the middle of all of this, where we are also connected with these connections to all the other consciousness, all these other fearful people, we have to decide to let it go and grow up and not be fearful and get rid of our fears. And the good news is that as you do that, your life will get so much better and you will feel so much better that just the heavy weights of all this fear just start to drop off, and you become a whole new person, and you see everything in a new light, and you become a happy camper. You know, life is good. You feel satisfied. You know, things just work out for you. now you and the larger conscious system is working as a team because you're awake, you're alert, you're paying attention. It can help you. It can give you not only information, but it can help put things together for you. So, you know, it's called synchronicity. So just the right kind of stuff happens for you at just the right time, and everything just kind of builds to you growing up and increasing your quality, and you just get on a roll, and it keeps on rolling. That's what you want to do. But you need to get there. You need to start the process. See, the hardest thing in this process is to get started, is to want to do it and actually get started, because that takes a lot of oomph. That takes a lot of interest and dedication. But once you get started, it's just easy to make it go more and more and more. It kind of goes of its own accord after that. But it's a tough start, because we have all this fear surrounding us. Everybody's pulling at us. We're trying to manipulate everyone else, and they're all trying to manipulate us. And that's why it's hard to actually make any progress, you see, because we're in the stew of fear, and it just have to stop it.
Yeah.
Say, I want off. You know, let me off of this merry-go-round, right? It's not, you know, I've been here. I've been struggling now for the last, 20, 30, 50, 60 years of my life, and I'm still struggling. I still can't get things the way I want them. I still can't make people be the way I want them to be. It's because you're trying to manipulate rather than trying to change yourself and just be yourself and grow up and let everything else take care of itself.
Wow. It's so true, though. I mean, we get so caught up, and all we have to do is make that choice that you want to get off, that you want to, it's like time to grow up. It's like, you know, and once you do, then you can have the support. You can connect in more rapidly and more easily and not have to do, you know, hours of meditation, or, you know, you don't have, it's not that difficult. It's just that we get so caught up in, and you're right, like we use fear. And so of course, fear's going to use us. Like, you know, we're going to see it everywhere until we say enough. So, wow. Well, I can't believe, you know, how quickly this hour went, and we're kind of going a little bit over, which is fine. It's just, you know,
we could just go over as much as we want. We're in charge now. You are the executive producer of this, and, you know, if it goes long, well, that's, you're the boss.
That's true.
So it can be, you know, and if it gets too long of a piece to feed to your audience, then you just chop it up into smaller pieces and feed it to them in chunks. You know, I mean, you're the master of this program. That's much better than working for, what was it, CBS or whoever it was we were working for, where they have neat little packages that everything has to fit into.
Yes.
And commercials that we must listen to and that sort of thing. This is better. You can,
much better.
Yeah, we can, you know, if we talk for 3 hours, you can package it still in, you know, in 30-minute chunks if Good you want point. To pass it out that way. So there are no rules now.
That's true. That is true. It's interesting, though. Like, we do really get caught up in it's an individual process. I mean, that's where it has to start first. It can't be this, you know, we try to do things backwards. Like, we try to, you know, we see everything around us and we try and make it all about everybody else. And, you know, we're waiting for something to happen so that we can make the change. It's like we're always sort of, I don't know, it's like we're trying to do everything backwards when we just have to realize that we just have to make that decision. We have to take charge. We have to be in, you know, not necessarily in control, because we're never going to be in control. And if we think we're going to be in control, well, you know, that's the expectation that usually blows us out and back into fear, because we can't. But we can choose how we want to respond to things, and we can choose to just step out of that story, step out of that, you know, that constant, what feels like can be a constant state of fear that emanates around us, to sort of, maybe it's to help us, maybe it's there. I mean, we know that there's a different part of that, because you've already explained it. But, you know, in some ways, maybe it's to help us to say, you know, enough is enough. Like when you get to that point of saturation where you say, okay, I can't do it anymore. Or our bodies just, you know, our bodies start to break down, which happens a lot too. And then it made me think of, you know, these people that thought we were going to, you know, somehow evolve so much that we would bring our body with us. And then I'm thinking from the perspective of everything that you've said, I mean, I don't think that that's actual possibility, but I think it's our consciousness that we certainly can bring with us. And we doesn't necessarily have to forget when we go into another virtual reality. But anyway, that's another topic for a whole other day.
Yeah. Well, it's true. You know, we do have to take that, we have to take that step. And the first step is to be responsible for yourself, right, and to stop trying to be responsible for other people. Now, of course, if you have a child, you have to be responsible for the child. But if we're talking about adults, people have to be who they are and you have to be who you are. And if you're waiting for them to help you, well, that'll probably never happen. You have to do it yourself. You have to deal with things. So it isn't important. Well, I shouldn't say that. It can be important, but it isn't really fundamental what happens. What's fundamental is how do you deal with it? Right. You see? So, okay, let's say you're in a situation and you've got all these problems. You know, a lot of relationships are problem relationships for you. You know, your boss doesn't appreciate your work, and you know, your spouse doesn't appreciate your work, and, you know, whatever else. Your children don't appreciate, you know, what you're trying to do for them. You know, all this thing, you know, all these relationships. You can't wait for all that to fix itself. You can't say, well, I can do this after all these other people, you know, start treating me better or whatever. You have to say, I'm going to change. It's not them. It's about me. The only person I can change is me. I can't change anyone else. Now, I've got this world I live in. Accept it. That's the world you live in. Whatever it is, whatever the dysfunction's in there, whatever, and say, that's it. Now, given that that's it, and I can't change it, because I can't change anybody but me, how can I change me to make this better? You see, and the way you can change yourself to make it better is to give up trying to manipulate it to be the way you want it, which of course is the way you know it should be, you know, the right way. You give that up and you just say, I'm going to grow myself. I'm going to not react with fear and with ego. So then you say, well, what's ego? Well, find something that doesn't feel good, and that's because of your ego. If there's anything in your life that doesn't feel good, it's because of your ego, not because of what these other people are doing. So now you say, well, I will change myself. And once I do that, I'll see my environment differently. And you will. So then you say, here's something that makes me feel not so good. So where is, you know, what's the ego that's pushing that? And then once you find the ego pushing that, say, what's the fear that makes that ego feel that way? You know, where's the fear? Then once you find the fear, you just have to get over it. You have to have the courage to say, I'm not going to get in that trap. Fear's a trap. I'm not going to be pushed to react and interpret things that way because of that fear. So you just have to take the effort to catch yourself. Next time you start feeling bad about something and say, oh, that's that fear. I'm not going there. You know, you just stop, and eventually you become that. You don't react that way anymore. Well, that fear's gone. Then you work on the next one. So you just have to fix yourself. And if you can fix yourself, everything else will straighten up around you. You'd be surprised how much it kind of reminds me of a little article I read some time ago. This was probably 30 years ago, right after I think Prozac came out.
Okay.
And this lady was writing an article, and she was trying to be amusing. It was an amusing article, but it was very important the way it made this. She says that this Prozac was really a very magic pill, because she started taking it, and when she did, everybody in her environment started to be nicer. It changed everyone in her environment. You know, the boss, the husband, the kids, none of those people acted as mean toward her as they did before she took the Prozac, you know. And so she was going on writing this thing about how much better her taking Prozac, you know, made all the other people in her life. And that's the point. It does work that way. When you fix yourself and you change your own viewpoint, it's amazing. This terrible place you live in with all these problems and struggles that you have, mostly they just melt away. Because at the end, you realize that you make them all that way. They're terrible struggles because you choose to see them as terrible struggles. If your perspectives were different, you know, you wouldn't see them that way. And people would say, oh, no, no, they're terrible. They're really terrible things out there that I have to deal with. But that's your interpretation. As you change you, that interpretation will change. And a lot of those terrible things you have to deal with just disappear, go up in smoke. And those people will suddenly be so much kinder and gentler and nicer and more attentive and whatever than they were before, you see. And all you did was change yourself. So it is a there is magic in growing up, in changing. It's not just that you now are this little bubble of happiness in this mean, nasty world that, you know, is the same way it is. You see everything in a bigger picture. The things that used to upset you don't upset you anymore. Right. You see, because you let people be the way they are. Well, that's just the way they are. It's not about me. You don't take that personally, you see. All right, they said something rude or whatever, but, you know, that's them. Because they have a lot of fear and they have a lot of ego makes them say those kinds of things. And if anything, you feel empathy for them. You feel like, oh, wow, you know, I'm sure glad I've outgrown that I don't have to be in that, you know, in that world anymore. And you feel more like going up and giving them a hug rather than, you know, slapping them or doing what you wanted to do before, because you know they're suffering, they're struggling, they're trying to manipulate everything and they can't, and it's not working, you see, but you're not anymore. You can just accept that, see it for what it is, and it's not personal anymore. You don't have to feed it. You can just see it and even hug it, even, help it. So you see, it just changes everything, changes your perspective. So it's an easy thing to say, of course, yes. You know, oh, go just get rid of your fear. But it you can do it. It is starting is the hard part. Yeah. You can do it. And you just really have to want to.
Because it really, in the end, it's all about our choices. It's all about our intention and our choice to see things differently, to stop getting caught up in the story, to stop getting caught up in our ego, what our ego is fearful about, which is what? That it ends? I don't know. I think that's what it is that there's an end to it, so it fears it.
That's one thing. People do have a fear of death.
Right.
But they also have a fear of being inadequate. They have a fear of not being good enough. They have a fear of being
not liked.
Not appreciated. Yeah. Not liked. They have a fear of not getting, you know, all the stuff they need. They have a fear of being poor. They have a fear of being destitute. They have a fear of all kinds of fears about their life, you see,
failure and success.
Yeah, failure and success, right. If they're real successful, then they have a fear of, you know, can they continue? Or what about, can I meet the next challenge? You know, these are insecurities. So we have fears about almost everything. You have a fear that your love life isn't going the way you want it. And it's not going to go the way you want it. And your significant others aren't really connecting with you the way you want. And is that going to get worse? Is that going to come apart? Where will I be then? And everything is tied up with fear. We fear almost everything. And if we can just let all those fears go, then we can let other people just be who they are and interact with them. And then we make choices, you see? And when you get there, all your choices are really happy choices, even if what you have to choose to do is to walk away from that relationship. Because when you walk away from that relationship, that's a happy choice, because you've been there and you see all the potentials and where it is, and it's not, you know, you've outgrown it perhaps. And you might think, oh, that's so sad. You know, well, it isn't. It's a step forward. You see, so whatever you do, once you get rid of all the fear, you're making choices. And all your choices are happy choices. They're all toward a better, you know, a better quality of consciousness, a better environment. It's not the, you know, you're not in the fear soup anymore. So it doesn't mean if somebody looked at you from outside, they may say, wow, that person still has a hard life. It doesn't matter about the hard life. It matters about your perspective. How do you feel about that hard life? Right. People who have hard lives can be very happy people. You know, they can be very fulfilled people. It's not about how much stuff you've got or, you know, how many people, you know, like you. It's something deeper than that. It's about you, your own quality of consciousness. And you don't really worry about anybody else's. Now, I shouldn't say you don't worry about it. You can help other people change their quality of consciousness just by giving them an environment in which they can change themselves more easily. But that's all you can do. You can provide them with that environment. And typically, the environment they need is one of feeling secure. If people feel really secure, then they have a higher probability of being able to go change themselves. When they feel insecure, when they feel like they're being attacked on all sides and nothing's working out and, you know, they have all this, then they can't change themselves at all, because now they're just in defensive mode. They're just trying to keep their head above water, you know. They're kind of, you know, from one desperate day to the next desperate day, because now they're in this desperate story and they're trapped in it. You have to get out of those belief traps, out of those fear traps. And then once you're free, life is good. Life is good. That doesn't mean $1 million is automatically deposited, you know, in your checking account, you know, whenever you pass go. It just means life is good. It doesn't matter whether that $1 million is deposited in your account. What you are making good choices in your life, whatever that is. You are making the most of it. You're growing. You're becoming a better person. You're becoming love. And as that happens, life just gets good.
Right. Well, I would like to say, even though we could go longer, that this is probably a good place to stop. I don't know if you've noticed, but my lighting has changed dramatically.
Yes,
because
I see. You've got a rosy glow to your skin now. Yeah.
Well, yes, we have a little bit of a rain thing happening here, so it's gotten quite dark on my end. So different lighting has taken over. All right. So I think this would be a good place to stop anyway.
Now, actually, that coloring, Lori, just brings out the red in your hair.
It does. I know. I kind of like it. Okay, so people can get a hold of you. What's the best one?
Okay, well, they can go to my website, which is www.mybigtoe.com.
Hyphens in between, right?
You can put hyphens between my-big-toe, or you don't have to have the hyphens. It'll work either way.
Perfect.
It should work either way. I think it will. And if you go there, that will lead you to probably all the other places.
Right.
But a simple thing to do, if you can't remember any of that, is just go to Google and put in Thomas Campbell or put in My Big Toe.
There you go.
And if you do that, you will get links to my website, to my YouTube site, and to, you know, all the other sources where I have stuff. Now, my YouTube site now has about 130 videos. From very long to actually pretty short. For me, short is like a half an hour.
Yeah.
You know? Long is like 16 hours.
Oh, dear. So, but that's a couple days.
Take it in pieces. You know, you got to take all the little pieces. So if you get to that, and you want to do the best overall summary. Right now, it's still Calgary Workshop, which you can find on the videos. Nice. That I did that in Calgary, Canada, about 2 or 3 years ago, and that's a good summary of everything that I've talked about, a summary of the theory. So you can find me there, and if you're interested in my books, you can read them for free on Google Books. Or you can buy them all the usual places. You order them in bookstores. Sometimes you can just find them in bookstores and Amazon and, you know, that sort of thing. Typical places.
Nice. All right. Well, as always, love talking to you, Tom. I don't get a lot in, but it's you. You give such a rich, you know, description of everything. It's not always necessary for me to pop in. So
no, that's the way it is. You can't ask Tom Campbell, you know, or you can't expect a short answer. All my answers are long. But part of that is that if you don't have the background, then you really can't understand where I'm coming from and what's being said. So in order for you to understand the point I'd like to make, I have to go back and kind of bring up a lot of background material so you'll have a bigger context for kind of understanding the point. Because if I just went just to the point and said it, it'd be, yeah, that's nice, but that doesn't make any sense. You know, that won't work. You have to see the bigger picture to understand. And still, I've just given a very small picture. You know, like that Calgary workshop, that was 3 days. It was like 3 hours on a Friday, then 7 hours on a Saturday, another 7 hours on a Sunday. So all of that, just to basically present, you know, the ideas.
Wow.
And that's not in depth. That's just to present the ideas. That's still kind of a fly across the top. But it takes a long time. When you have a theory of everything, it takes a lot to explain that, to get it all out, so you can derive it rather than just state it. What I did today, I just made statements, and you know, you have to just give me the, you know, suspend belief for a while and say, well, okay, if that statement's true, you know, I'll follow what it is he's saying. But if you go to these other things, you actually can get the logical derivations of why that makes good sense, why it has a pretty decent probability of being right.
Right. All right. Well, thank you. I think this was a great show. So I'm excited. I'm excited to have next month, and I'll probably go through some of this and bring up some questions, and we'll go from there.
Well, you know, also, Lori, you should not be hesitant to reach out and grab me and point me in the direction you want me to go.
This was the direction. It was perfect. I loved it.
Yeah.
We are on the same length. I know that.
Okay. Because I like to tell hosts that. Sometimes they feel if I start talking, you know, they can't interrupt. You know, that would be rude. But anytime I'm going off on a path and that's not the path you want to go in, just say, excuse me, but I'd like to talk a little bit more about this other direction. And okay. I don't mind that at all. So you feel free to give me direction as needed.
Fair enough. I think we've been doing this long enough that I'm not too afraid, but I usually don't want to interrupt you because you're on like such a good little discussion that it's important. Anyway, love having you on the show. Looking forward to next month, and we'll see what happens then.
All right. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate your setting this all up and doing the work and giving me
a voice.
Giving me a voice to ramble on. Yes. Appreciate all that.
All right. So you'll be with us pretty much it's the last Tuesday of every month. You can get it live, and then it's usually produced by the audio will be produced by Friday, but the video, well, we'll see. Hopefully it'll get up as soon as I can. All right. So take care. We'll see you next week.
Have a question for Lori and want to be on the next News from the Heart show? Drop us a line via instantfeedback@bmajor.org. News from the Heart is brought to you by Intuitive Soul and is produced by Major Radio for Clear Channel's iHeartRadio and bmajor.org.